What does Australia's next generation of young leaders have to say about the future of India-Australia relations in a post-COVID world? And how do Indian scholars, scientists, practitioners, and students factor in? You're listening to Shared Visions, the podcast that spotlights the Australian government's new Colombo plan and gets to the heart of these questions. Today, we speak with James Rosengren, a student of Commerce and Law at Bond University, and Prabhanshu Bhardwaj, an MBA candidate at Bond University.
Hi, Ronak. I'm Prabhanshu. So I started studying in Australia in 2019. I enrolled in MBA program here at Bond, and I've recently graduated in October. Currently, I'm looking forward for opportunities, looking out for things to do in Australia. And so during my second semester in 2019, I met James, and James had this plan of going to India around September, if I'm not wrong. And so we just connected along. James had a lot of interest in India, and that was the common thing to start off our friendship with. We have a lot of Indian friends in common. So that's how it all started, initially with the plan that he wants to learn a little bit about Indian culture before he goes for his two or three semesters to be spent in India. And James.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm James. And I obviously, like you said, was an alumni of the new Colombo Plan program. And I spend a lot of my time on my new Colombo program in India. And so I am currently, so I finished my degree. So I studied a Bachelor of Commerce and a Bachelor of Law. And so I finished both my degrees. And the law degree was actually completed over in India for the final semester of that. A bit of background is I have been to India before. So I went to India in 2016 and took part in a volunteer experience there. I was teaching at a school outside of Udaipur and working with a boys' home and orphanage out there as well. And then kind of travelled out down from Rajasthan out right to the bottom in Kerala, and then kind of a bit more of Asia after that. So I had a great introduction to both the north and the south in that kind of experience, and then obviously always wanted to go back but just needed the right opportunity, and the new Colombo Plan program came up, and it was something I'd looked into and seen a bit about in my early university times. And then as it kind of went further along, so this is something I'm really interested in, and I had to start thinking, well, if I want to do this new Colombo Plan program, where would I want to go, or what would I want to actually be doing across that period? And for me, it was no doubt that India was a place to be. And if you look at it from multiple aspects, from my point of view, it was, okay, well, where would I want to go for an enjoyment aspect, as in where would I enjoy being for? And so my program ended up being, was planned to be a year and a half. So for me, it was where do I want to go and live for the next year and a half? And also where will be a very beneficial place to situate myself for the future. So where's a great place to get some experience in more than just an enjoyment sense, but in a professional sense and a kind of cultural immersion sense. And for me, it said enjoyment wise, I knew I'd love India, and I already did as a country and as a people. But I also thought, where is the world going, and where is the Indo-Pacific region particularly going? And India was the clear answer, I think, to where is that, you know, future going to be. We've seen China have a very big rise over the last 20 years, but India is now doing a very similar thing, but in a different way and in their own unique way, which is why it's so special. And I think India's unique selling point is that huge capacity of skilled labor with the democratic backing of a democratic state, which is something that China obviously just fundamentally lacks. So that's kind of the two. Primarily for me, it was where would I want to go for the enjoyment and for the professional side of things, and India was that clear answer. And so that's how I ended up going there, and I started doing the planning around it. And like I said, I was fortunate enough to receive the new Colombo Plan scholarship from the Australian government, and that kind of then started the ball rolling. And so I continued to plan. It ended up being a year and a half was my proposed plan, and was how long I was going to spend. So I was leaving in September and in 2019, with an expectation of leaving at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. So I had a great kind of period planned out for there. Now, unfortunately, coronavirus obviously has impacted that. I'm now back in Australia, having left India in March this year, the end of March, when just after they shut the international borders within India. And so the Australian government obviously brought us all back. So just before they shut the international borders in Australia as well. And so then, yeah, like I said, Prabhanshu said, fortunately, he actually came. So I think one of the best parts of this is that he has been studying in Australia and I've just spent some time studying in India and living there. So I think we've got a great kind of, he's from India studying in Australia. I'm from Australia and I studied in India. So I think there's a great combination and chance for us to discuss some interesting things over the next, half hour, 45 minutes. That
yeah, definitely.
Interesting discussion.
Definitely. So you said you meant, so James, you said you study commerce and law, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, when you wrote back to us, you wrote a lot about these very sort of enriching personal experiences that you had in India, which, really added a lot of dimension to the time that you spent here. But I'm, since you also mentioned, it wasn't just about that. It was also that academically and professionally, there was a lot to take away or a lot to learn from India. So could you just expand a little bit on that in terms of like how you feel like your experience in India informed what you're studying and what you hope to do in the future?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, academically, I finished my studies now, so that's a complete part of my chapter, you could say. But I was very fortunate enough to actually study at NLS, National Law School, in Bangalore, which I kind of found out through the process, but it's the best law school in the country. And so that was for someone who is actually much more interested in the business side of things. So my commerce degree is primarily where I want to follow career-wise. The exposure to the best and the brightest of Indian law, India's law, and Indian law students was an incredible perspective to get, and one that was it's a microcosm as well. So seeing the Bangalore campus, the students who are there are from all over India, and so it really was that diverse group of people, and it just shows you also how diverse India is as a country when you see all of its people in from different parts, all in one place, and so it's an incredible academic system. I think even just kind of combining that personal aspect and things that you get to see when you're traveling around a country, even in the most remote parts of India and in the smallest and tiny communities, the focus on education is something that is so inherently clear and is such a big focus. And I think for a country so large with such a large population, that focused education from the youngest age up until university and beyond is very, 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 very clear, but also very impressive in the scale that they are able to deploy it on. So that was kind of, yeah, I said, the academic experience is one that you go, well, like I said earlier, it's an incredibly skilled workforce that India is producing. And that's why they're becoming one of the tech centers of the world, particularly in Bangalore and Hyderabad, is because they're having a lot of young, a huge growing young population with a lot of applicable skills to the local market, but also the global market. And then professionally, I ended up doing 3 months of work with Infosys, and that was a great experience. And unfortunately, I didn't get to do it fully at their Bangalore campus. I had to work remotely because of COVID, but getting that exposure to, once again, and they've just actually, I saw on LinkedIn recently, they've been named the number one internship in the world by an American grading system as well, which is just shows how much influence India is now having and the spread that they have. And one of I guess the rest of my plan was, before COVID interrupted it, was to do some work with Tata as well. And the particular project I was going to work on there was to do with building the world's largest micro solar grid farm, which was, he said, so that was one of the projects I was going to be working on, which is an incredible feat to kind of be able to, to be able to do as a country and as an organization. And then the last bit of work I was going to do was with a philanthropy consulting firm. So a boutique philanthropy firm that kind of did some work with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation when they did their philanthropy in India, and a lot of that kind of that work in that philanthropic space. And one of the most interesting things, unfortunately, I didn't get to start with them because of COVID, but India's introduced in the last few years that kind of mandatory CSR, corporate social responsibility contributions from organization and company profits. And I think it's maybe a couple percent. It's not a huge amount, but it's that idea is we're making it something we fundamentally believe in as a government, as a country, to give back in various ways to our country. You know what I mean? It's that local impact that you can have. So for me, the experience I had and the exposure I got was, in a professional sense, incredible and very vast. And going forward, I don't know necessarily where I'm going to be able to apply it because there really are so many options. I definitely want to continue, for example, my Hindi training and my language skills there, because I think that would make it an even more transferable skill going forward. And but I think the amount of people from India that have now spread across the world is huge. Just like some of my best friends and colleagues like Prabhanshu, it's that, and it's understanding the Indian culture. And I think one of the key reasons why the benefits I've had from being and living in India is that I can now understand where Indians who are in Australia or wherever else in the world, how they culturally are and think and behave, which is, when you're in a new country, sometimes it's not always the case, because there is that disconnect between, well, you know, this might be Australian culture and this is Indian culture, and you've got to try and combine them. And if you don't understand, if you don't know much about India, then you won't understand the inner work, you know, the ways of interaction and cultural background. Mm.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that, you know, placing yourself in like an Infosys office or, you know, a nonprofit organization in India, like kind of directly taking on that experience head on, it's something that a lot of people talk about is, you know, the differences between workplaces and the differences in working styles between, you know, a westernized or like an individualistic society versus a collectivist society. So working in India, I lived in the US for really long as well, and working in the US versus working in India is fundamentally very different. So I totally agree with you in that having that experience can only, you know, only serves to enrich how you approach work in general. But Prabhanshu, so you have worked in Australia, or you've studied in Australia, or both?
So I worked in Singapore for 3 years, and then I was in India for a couple of years more, and now I've been here for 2 years, and still you're looking for a work in Australia. So, and
in Australia,
It's just difficult time right now, but that's being hopeful
for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. Why is it difficult? Yeah, tell me a bit about your experience now living in Australia as an immigrant, like looking for work. You know, what does it kind of look like for Indian students and young professionals there at the moment?
Ronak, I've been in Singapore for 3 years after my graduation. I was working for a startup based on a Singapore grant where we were researching about 3D printing and commercializing the technology altogether, creating products out of there. And getting those ideas, moved to India, where I've worked to create a Bollywood museum using 3D printing. There's one in Imagica, close to Mumbai.
You mean a museum like a wax museum, or what do you mean?
It's a kind of wax museum, but we use 3D printing tech for that.
Wow.
Instead of wax. Yes. Wow. And so we have worked with Dharma Production, which is one of the largest production house in India. Mm-hmm. And apart from that, we have worked out most of the celebrities like Ranbir, Katrina, Deepika. To create their life science figurines.
So the technology that went into constructing the Bollywood Museum in Imagica came from Australia.
It comes from Singapore.
It
comes from Singapore. Yeah. We were researching for 3 years in Singapore, so that's the technology that we worked around to create the life size figurines of celebrities. So one of them is up and running in Imagica, and then again, if you talk about COVID. We have been disrupted really badly. It's been shut for 6 months.
Of course.
So yeah, the time of struggles are on.
But that project's kind of in the past, and now you're looking for new work in Australia, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
okay.
In between, once I've launched the thing, I've decided that I want to continue with my studies. So I decided Australia, a lot of influence is from my friend's dad, who did his MBA from Bond University, where I'm studying right now, where I've studied. He did his MBA in 1992, the year I was born. So he influenced my dad. Is like, you got to send your son to Australia, get him. And it's one of the best world-class education, and he will learn a lot. So one of the influences from an alumni who is my dad's really good friend. So that was the first initial influence to come to Australia. Once I landed here, yeah, it was a really amazing experience altogether. First is my cohort. We have got people from around the world, from around 10 countries, including India, which is Brazil, Russia, Japan, US, Switzerland, Australia, of course, where I met James. And so that has been it's an eye-opening experience where you meet multicultural people and understand their cultural behaviors, their food and whatnot. So that's one of the best part of my MBA during Australia. And then moving on, I met James in the second semester. He had a lot of Indian friends. So we had a lot of common Indian friends in Australia. And James has been keen on understanding how Indians work and think. And that has been like the starting point, where the common ground, where we got together and start discussing things about him going to India. And that was the first starting point of our relationships, where we spoke a lot about how there are different behavioral differences and similarities, understanding the language. And for simple instances, a lot of languages, even English, don't have the non-living thing, where we associate gender along with non-living things. So that's one of the learning part of learning Hindi. And I think my mom, when he went in there, he spent a couple of days initially, and then a week in with my family.
Yeah.
And interestingly, a week after, I was spending time with his family. He was in India, I was in Australia, and we were exchanging families. Wow. And my mom has already adopted him as a son, so technically he's my brother now.
He's definitely my real bhai. But so Prabhanshu was my first real Hindi teacher, you could say. And it often happened over casual conversations or over a drink after a day of study or whatever it was. And he definitely gave me such an incredible start, I think, to go over to the country and have that more, because my first time there was definitely a different experience. I did get to have a lot of exposure, but in different ways. Like I said, I was in a very small community outside of Udaipur, and to understand the adult world, the world of India and the international mindset, and how, as you said, as a young professional to go over to the country and engage was a great starting point to have. And like you said, it just, even the examples of his family are incredible, as in the Indian people. And it's one of the reasons why I love the country so much. They're just so incredibly welcoming. And I think it's impossible to find a culture that is more welcoming. And I've done quite a bit of travel around the world, and I still haven't yet found a place where I feel more welcome to somebody's home than I have in India. And like you said, I was very fortunate to visit Kolkata, which is where Prabhanshu is from, and stay. Actually, my father was in India at the time. We'd just done a trip up into northeast India, up in the Arunachal Pradesh and Sikkim, nice. And Assam. Yeah. And mm-hmm. we coming back down through Kolkata just before my father left, and we then got to see his family. And like you said, it was a bit of a family swap. My father and I were there, and he was back with my family in Australia, seeing them. And it was just that incredible cultural immersion you get. And I was actually fortunate enough, his family invited me back to Kolkata a few weeks later to come join them for Durga Puja, which, as I'm sure you know, is nice. One of the most biggest celebrations in West Bengal. Sure. And a very, very big cultural festival. And mm-hmm. that was, once again, that was an incredible experience, because I was well. It's one of the most amazing parts of the Hindu faith, actually, is I was welcomed into that religious celebration,
the space,
like family, and being able to take part in the puja and go around and see all of the incredible things that they do in Kolkata to celebrate for this. So I had such a, and you said you can't always get these experiences when you're just traveling or living somewhere. It's a real cultural immersion that I was able to get. And it's, you know, through that family lens. And so like I said, he was my first Hindi teacher, and continued to tell me that my Hindi is still not quite good enough. But he's, said, it's still working on it, you know, Tori Tori Hindi Botahun. But I'm sure my 8 months back in Australia now has led to my accent really getting butchered. But Andrew. He was talking, like you said. So he, we met then, and then since then you've finished, haven't you, Prabhanshu? You've finished, and
So I recently graduated in October. My graduation ceremony is due tomorrow. Looking forward to it.
Nice.
And apart
but
from
is
that,
is it happening virtually, or is it going to be a real in-person ceremony?
So it will be in-person ceremony, but there won't be a crowd altogether. There will be a limited people in the ceremony. And it will be telecasted all over the world. So my parents would be here. That would be a proud moment for them. But yes, so they will be looking through online link where it will be telecasted live. So that's how it's going to be.
Cool. So you're Bengali.
So interestingly, I'm not Bengali, because I'm from Kolkata. And a lot of planning has been done with James and like how you want to go to India. And also because my dad is from defense. He served for 19 years in Indian Air Force.
Okay.
And
so you've moved around a lot.
Yeah, I moved around a lot.
Yeah.
Origin is from up north, Haryana. But we have traveled along everywhere in India. I've been to Kashmir, Rajasthan, south, and to Bidar, Hyderabad. So I've traveled everywhere, lived 3-4 years everywhere, and moving along with my dad during his postings. Yeah, so that's why I've been telling James, is like you can have a different experiences in India. If you want a cultural experience, it's a different thing. You go to decide your days in such a way. If you want a very spiritual experience, you go different places. And if you want to enjoy nature, you go different places. You go to Kerala, you go to... And if you want a heritage experience, you go to Madhya Pradesh, or you go to Rajasthan, where you get to see all historical artifacts and whatnot. So there are different experiences in India, and you can't complete them at one go and generalize the things. We have different food, we have different music. Everything is so diverse. Dialect changes at every 100 kilometers. So it's really diverse, and you got to enjoy that. It's fun part is enjoying those differences and finding the unity in those differences. And similar aspects is here in Australia, you have people all around the world, and they are so welcoming. And in terms of opportunities, or even in terms of things, that they're coming with open arms. I have not found out of place here. Understanding or in communications wise as well. So it's been amazing experiences altogether. Working with locals, I have worked in restaurants and gas stations along while my studying during part times, and it's amazing. It's amazing.
You know, one thing that you know you just mentioned also that you know you have a bit of experience, you know, having studied in Singapore and having coordinated that project that you mentioned in Imagica remotely from Singapore. You know, you coordinated sort of a cross-cultural sort of venture that was taking place in India, and both of you also, when you wrote back to us, talked about you know that's you know how this is like a very potent area of collaboration between both the countries, and in terms of manufacturing and in terms of business and commerce, there's a lot that can be leveraged. There's a lot that India can leverage from Australia, and vice versa. So I'm just wondering if both of you can kind of, if we could just discuss that, you know, looking forward, looking, you know, acknowledging what's happening in the current moment because of the coronavirus pandemic, but also understanding that India and Australia have made a lot of tangible moves towards solidifying their relationship, and they've done so very publicly. You know, India and Australia have signed strategic agreements. There are shared, you know, naval resources now. And there are incrementally, as time goes on, there's an indication that the India and Australia will be working together. But, you know, I'm just wondering from both of your guys' perspective, what does that look like in your fields? Or like, what kind of expectations or hopes do you have for collaboration between these two countries?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure Prabhanshu will also agree, but there is so many different elements that will be that can be discussed about where the future of the relationship is. I think I'll just touch on it briefly because you did talk, you mentioned that naval bases, and I think that's an interesting, pardon me, that's an interesting area to discuss now because, you know, up until the early 2000s, that kind of last half century was somewhat strained, you know, defence-wise and in that regard between Australia and India. But since those early 2000s, the relationship has been a much more positive one and has been consistently growing in a positive upward spiral. And so it's one of those things that India and Australia are both huge powers, economically at least, within the G20. For one, they are both the largest naval powers or maritime powers on the Indian Ocean's littoral states, so all the kind of bordering nations to the Indian Ocean. And the Indo-Pacific on a global scale is becoming much, much more prominent within itself, as in people are now focusing much more on different parts of Asia and the Pacific for growth than they used to. And I think considering we've had obviously a very long-standing relationship as Australia with the US and with the UK, and the UK and India have a very similar, you know, historical relationship to an extent, it's now kind of we're all turning to more local regions going, well, how are we going to try and build ourselves within our region? And India's come up as a power hugely economically in the last few years, and I think it's within the next 3 years India will be the fifth largest economy in the world, and then I think in the next five it'll be the third. And so India's growth has been huge, and I think that still is continuing, maybe not as fast because of COVID, but it still is a growing powerhouse. And Australia is obviously recognizing that and looking for relationships within the region rather than just those kind of US and UK relations we've had in the past. And like I said, so that naval relationship and that the military relationship we've had is definitely growing. You've got things like the Indian, US, Australia and Japan quadrilateral security dialogue, and that's, you know, an informal strategic forum, but it's an area that is getting more and more formal, you could say, and a higher priority going forward. Even with Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister here, and obviously the Prime Minister in India, you know, Narendra Modi, they have had this. Scott Morrison was meant to visit India earlier this year. Now, unfortunately, COVID impacted that. But we've still had the Australian-India leaders virtual summit, which was that kind of area where they've elevated the bilateral strategic partnership to a comprehensive strategic partnership. And it is one of those things that they're basing on mutual understanding, that trust, and their shared common interest, and also importantly to note, that shared democratic base. And so I think with the conflict that we can see now between China and Australia and the rest of the world, and China and the US particularly, and then obviously there has been that China-India conflict in the last year that I'm sure COVID has been a bit of a catalyst for a lot of these strained relations across those across the nations. Australia and India really are, I think, looking forward more so into the strength of that relationship. And just a quick little example from Australia and China recently is that they've recently increased the tariff on wine. So there's now a very large tariff, up to 200% on Australian wine exported into China. And so a lot of these trade agreements are kind of going out, you could call them backwards, you could say, whereas I think India is, you said, while they have a lot, very large international tariffs, are slowly kind of reducing that and making it a much more easy country to do business with. So yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there between that, you know, the trading partnership between the two countries, India and Australia, and kind of, as I said, it started off in the last 20 years as a strengthening military alliance, but I think the last few years it will show, and the outlook is definitely one of economic growth and cultural partnership as well.
So interestingly, I love the gesture by Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison based on how he made samosas during those summit. And that's also because he was supposed to be in India in early this year, where India was supposed to host Australian Prime Minister. And that couldn't happen because of the corona, of course. And later, when this online summit that happened, where both Indian leaders, Indian and Australian leaders, are talking about the future, growth, and giving the hope to both citizens of both countries. That has been an amazing gesture by both leaders, of course, and where Scott Morrison is actually preparing fritters and whatnot at that moment. And even there was a message being circulated during our Diwali by Scott Morrison, how he has been explaining the impact of Diwali and how the festival of light and hope is going to be, it's going to bring hope for Australians and Indians in Australia towards a better future. So that has been an amazing gesture by Scott Morrison, which I want to highlight here. Apart from that, talking about the relationships, the trade relationships, we have recently signed free trade agreements where we're reducing the tariffs and double taxations and whatnot. So there is a scope of growth in startup space as well. We have seen how Ola have established market in Australia. And even in a city like Gold Coast, which is not a major city, which is Sydney, apart from Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane, we have services of Ola. Similarly, Cars 24 and Urban Company, all these are actually planning to expand in Australia. So there is a scope and there is a hope for Indian companies to expand in Australia, like going abroad, which is a new journey, which is basically there. We have seen how US companies or big US startups have expanded around the world. It's the first time some startups are going outside the country and they're starting to establish their businesses and taking those ideas outside India. So that's an amazing part of it.
Startup potential is something I've heard a lot about, because I was just in the previous conversation I had for the podcast, I was speaking with someone who mentioned, you know, things like Oyo and Ola and Zomato and sort of these very lucrative startups that have just exploded in India, you know, through a very simple idea. Like the idea behind Oyo is so simple. It's already tapping into the hundreds and hundreds of like motels and guest houses that are already there in India, and it's just standardizing them. It's great. And you know, I've heard a lot
imagine for a young entrepreneur like him. He's just 23 now.
Yeah.
And interestingly, one of my friend who is from Japan, who is part of my cohort culture, he was actually doing his part time, and they were and I came to know about this, how they're expanding in Japan as well. Is he came and they said they're looking
for Oyo is expanding in Japan.
Yes, Oyo is actually expanding in Japan.
Oh wow!
And that's how I came to know. It's that because you have like a people around you that's from different countries, and how they are talking about Indian companies, and you feel proud about these things. And he said, "Yeah, Oyo is being expanding in Japan, and they have asked me to look for people because he was doing his part time for a company consulting them on human resource." So that's an interesting part where Indian startups are growing and expanding, and then looking at lucrative market like Japan and Australia. So That's an amazing part. So yes, there's a big scope of expanding businesses for startups, of course.
I can completely agree. And actually, just on that quickly, which is, I remember whilst I was in India, I think it was during the time I was there, Zomato actually bought out Uber Eats within the Indian market. And I think it's just as a quick kind of case study shows how incredibly quick the Indian startups are growing and also how competitive they are on a global scale. And so I think, like I said, if you can suddenly beat out a very established, Uber Eats is definitely an established brand on a global scale now, but India is definitely, and I think particularly for that Indo-Pacific market, it's producing a business model that is much more sustainable and much more targeted towards those larger markets and the kind of across more so developing nations and countries with such cultural diversity. They're really building up those sustainable business models. And so I think that's, like Anshu said, is the strength of the Indian entrepreneurship and startup space is definitely a leading area within that longer term relationship. In this the chat we're having today, and the relationship I have with Prabhanshu, for example, is the exact reason why these kind of programs are so incredible. And particularly this program with Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade for the New Combat Plan, but it and one of their biggest objectives is to create people to people links and deep cultural ties between the nations, and they're trying to do so by having young professionals interact with other young professionals and people within that within different parts of the Indo-Pacific, and that's exactly what it's done. I mean, like I said, I now have a very good friend and colleague within Prabhanshu, and also his family, and like his brother, who is also a young professional, is in microfinance in India, in Kolkata. And so those relationships you form on a personal and professional level are so incredibly strong and long lasting. When you can form that bond in a cultural sense, it is more so than just if you meet someone at university, for example, or if you meet somebody whilst working, immersing yourself with somebody else in another nation's culture is something that has a long-lasting impact on yourself and the people you interact with. And also, secondly, just professionally, as of course, like I said, that's one of the reasons why I did choose India, but these kind of programs, and I'm sure I can attest to it now, having returned to Australia and been searching for new jobs in Australia and recently kind of got a graduate role with an organization here, the ability to differentiate yourself and bring something different, bring that unique aspect and unique perspective is one that's always valuable. And that's why Prabhanshu will be, such high demand in whatever work he ends up in now that he's graduated, is because he has that different perspective. And so whatever you do, I think the opportunity, like I said, to follow a different kind of path, do something a little bit different, which is something like the New Combat Plan offers, is so highly valuable because it gives you the chance to learn something different and provide a unique perspective on the kind of pathway that you might end up leading.